This is an iHeart podcast. Guaranteed human.
Why should you listen to Armstrong and Getty On Demand?
We're not boring. A lot of news is boring.
And tedious.
And depressing.
And makes you angry. You don't want to live your life like that.
Hey, I'm Jack Armstrong. He's Joe Getty.
We're Armstrong and Getty.
We try to bring you the truth.
And help you figure out this crazy modern world.
How about something about a comedic tone?
We have a winner.
Yes. Listen to Armstrong and Getty On Demand on the iHeartRadio app,
Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, so let me explain something that is terrible about Latin America. How about that for an opening? We're about to talk about California, but let's talk about Latin America. What is it about the different Latin America countries that makes it terrible? The people are wonderful, the food is great, the music's a good time. What is it? Is it the crime? Kind of. The crime's bad. The problem is the crime isn't just on the streets in places like Latin America. The crime is institutionalized in systems of government. And that means the people themselves cannot escape from it. If a criminal gang takes over your neighborhood in Mexico, God forbid, maybe you can throw all 12 of your family members in a car and drive across town and get to a neighborhood where that criminal gang cannot lord violence and control over you. But if it's the federal government, the state government, the local government, where the crime itself has been institutionalized, you, the Mexican family, you have nowhere else to go. In the United States of America, I have told you time and time again, the Democrat Party exists on fraud, foreigners, and cheating in elections. Without FFC, there is no major party known as the Democrat Party. They would be a relatively obscure 20% party. They have to steal. They have to bring in foreign barbarians who don't care about freedom. And they have to cheat in elections. And there is no place in the United States of America that is a bigger evidence marker of this than the state of California, which, of course, we will get to in a moment. But before we get to California, I want to look back on something we've had a discussion about before. Different states have been in the news, of course. Minnesota, Maine. Remember when Steve Robinson talked about Maine?
We went to a place on Anderson Street in Portland. There's one building there, one office building, that has five Medicaid providers there. Also in the building is a Dahabshiil, which of course we all know is the Somalia Central Bank's preferred money transmitting service and winner of the 2024 Somalia Excellence Awards. The Dahabshiil is in the same building as five Medicaid businesses that have all grown explosively over the last 5 years, all have the same people working for them, and use your imagination about what exactly is happening there. When we visited the last time, as we were leaving, the Brinks driver was walking out with bags of cash, Jesse. You can't even make this stuff up. That was the full cycle. The money flows into the Medicaid agencies, to the Dahabshiil, and off to Somalia. And if you don't think that there are political factions in Somalia trying to expand that flow, protect that flow, systematically exploit that flow, you're crazy.
So, let's think about this. You have this East Coast state, Maine. This East Coast state, Democrat rule. And across the ocean, dump of a country named Somalia. All they do is steal over there. You brought in a bunch of Somalis into Maine. The Somalis now work hand in hand with the Democrat Party to steal. It's a criminal network, an institutionalized criminal network, where the taxpayer is being pillaged by local Democrats and foreign dirtballs. All right, you got all that. Now, Maine. With all due respect, I've been there myself. The lobster was wonderful. The accents are fantastic. Maine is small. I realize it's a U.S. state. I'm not being dismissive of it, but I'm not even talking landmass-wise. Budget-wise, not a big state. Not a big state at all. That's the level of fraud that takes place in Maine. Now think about that level of fraud, and let's go west like the settlers did long time ago, out to the state of California. Think about this. California, if it broke off from the United States of America and became its own country, would have the fifth largest economy on planet Earth. If it was the country of California, their economy would be a major superpower. All the people who live there, all the money that changes hands there, if that's the level of fraud taking place in Maine, Minnesota, what's happening under complete Democrat rule in California? Remember this from Dr. Oz?
And here's the hard part to fathom. I don't want everyone to take a deep breath now. In Minnesota, which is cold this time of year, is just the tip of the iceberg. I think what we're seeing in Minnesota, which is billions of dollars of fraud that hurts our most vulnerable people and puts them at risk, because you steal not only their money, but you can steal their lives by putting them at risk for bad services provided at the wrong time that actually take away opportunities for others to get treatment. But what we're seeing in Minnesota is the tip of the iceberg, because it is dwarfed by what I saw in California, which is whole-scale cultural malfeasance around healthcare. There is a acceptance that you need to be in the fraud business, especially in Los Angeles. And the magnitude of fraud there, we believe, is approximating $4 billion just in hospice and home health care.
It's so bad. What we know, and we know a lot, but what we know is the tip of the iceberg. It's so bad, even CBS News is talking about it.
The government thinks this woman is dying in hospice care, but she just humiliated me, schooled me on the pickleball court. She's definitely not dying. She is a victim, though, of hospice fraud. So hospice fraud costs taxpayers hundreds of millions of dollars every year, and California is ground zero. So basically, people steal Medicare numbers, they enroll them in hospices, and then bill for tens, sometimes hundreds of thousands of dollars. A lot of these companies are just fronts. So over 700 of the roughly 1,800 hospices in LA County trigger multiple red flags for possible fraud. So we went door to door, and what we found was empty office spaces, piled up mail, and not a single healthcare worker in sight. There's even a stretch in LA with 500 registered hospice companies within just 3 miles of each other. In fact, there's even a single building with 89 registered hospice companies.
A single building, 89 of them. What's this look like? Nick Shirley went out there, started knocking on doors. Here's where your money's going.
Are you guys the hospice consultants?
Yes.
Oh, can we talk to you guys?
About?
I want to open my hospice.
You want to open a hospice?
Yeah.
Okay, what was your name?
My name's Nick, but I want to open up a hospice.
I understand, but we don't take care of that.
Can I get some information?
Do you want a number?
Yeah, or give me a flyer or something. And this is the hospice consultant.
Yes. No, hospice.
All right, so they say they're open right now. They won't let us into the lobby. This is no way to conduct business. We are two entrepreneurs trying to open up our own hospice.
Soaked to the bone right now.
We were denied service by the potential fraudsters, and as we were leaving, one of the fraudsters started to leave from the back in a $200,000 Maybach.
And we have a Mercedes-Benz driving out. Where can we open a hospice at? We'd like to open up a hospice. Get a Maybach just like you. So is this how I can get a Maybach? By opening up my own hospice?
It's really, really bad. And it's not just California money. It's your money. My money. Joel Pollack lives there. He lives under it. We'll talk to him about that next. What if you could turn your energy level up 10, 20, 30 notches? I'm talking about real natural energy, not I just had 10 cups of coffee, my palms are sweating energy. I mean, you just feel great all the time. After lunch at work, you don't need a nap. You're ready to go back to work, be better. on the weekends, Saturday afternoon, you're not crawling into bed for a power nap because you're so amped up and ready to go. You want to go for a walk. Let's go out. Let's do something. This is the difference when you start taking natural herbal supplements from Chalk. I have 70-year-olds who email me and tell me they don't even need to nap anymore. They have energy all day, every day, naturally. Natural herbal supplements from Chalk will save your life. 20% increase in your T levels in 90 days with a male vitality stack. Chalk.com/JesseTV. Go get a subscription.
How many more arrests do we think we're going to see nationwide? I mean, look, I think we have a fraud problem that is much worse in California than it is in Minnesota. I was talking actually to our small business administrator. I think she's found probably $500 million of fraud in Minneapolis and the broader Minnesota area. I think she's found $7 billion worth of fraud in California. So this is unfortunately a problem that is much bigger than Minnesota.
I want you to think about a criminal network, if you will, of various sizes. So first think about one that has a block or two of the drug trade in Chicago. They're going to have a certain amount of revenue available to them, right? And they're going to be bad and evil and whatnot, but they're going to have a certain amount of revenue available to them. And then think about something like a Mexican cartel or one of the large Italian families or Russian families, and the wealth available to them. It's much, much larger. It's much more pervasive, and it's staggering how powerful these organizations can get. That's California when it comes to their criminal fraud problem. That's the best way I can describe it. Maybe Joel will do better than I just did. Joining me now, Joel Pollack, wonderful opinion editor at the California Post. Joel, you live it, so I don't exactly have to tell you about it, but how bad is it there?
Well, what's happened in California in many respects, not just in terms of financial fraud, but also in voting systems that are vulnerable to fraud, is that California has simply legalized the fraud. So in voting, for example, it's legal to do what's called ballot harvesting, which is where you hand in other people's ballots. In fact, you can hand in as many as you can carry in California, and you don't even have to identify yourself. Now, that's not allowed in most of the democratic world because it is subject to fraud. But we just make it legal in California. And so what's happening in California in a legal sense is often worse than what's happening in a criminal sense. Yes, there are very weak mechanisms of oversight when it comes to hospice care. And yes, $20 billion at least, maybe up to $30 billion or more, went out the door during COVID from the state unemployment department because of very poor controls and lots of syndicates that were taking advantage of the system. That's criminal fraud in the ordinary sense. But there are also ways of committing fraud where, for example, we collect this tax on high-end real estate in Los Angeles, and what happens there is the money goes into the LA City Council and they pay left-wing groups that agitate for more giveaways to left-wing groups. I mean, it's a legalized form of fraud because the money gets cycled from taxpayers into the government, and the government then pays the left-wing groups to agitate for higher tax increases. I mean, it is a form of fraud, but it's completely legal under California law.
I don't even know where to begin, Joel, talking about the legal or illegal aspect of it. You know, let's start with the legal aspect of it, because so much of this I find fascinating, where, as you pointed out, really just crimes become lawful, and then there's no more breaks anymore. How long has it been like this? When did all this begin?
Well, this begins, you could say, in the pandemic in a serious way. I mean, there's always been a problem of fraud, but what happened in the pandemic was there was massive government spending and minimal oversight. And of course, that happened under the Trump administration, first term, last year of the first term. And you could say this massive influx of spending, not just federal spending, but money given to the states to spend, it was a one-shot deal. It was only for the pandemic. And then Joe Biden took office, and what Republicans saw as an emergency measure, Democrats then institutionalized as the standard operating procedure, just the normal course of business. And so they kept pushing all that money out the door and not checking who was taking it and who was spending it, because once they got away with it once, they realized they could get away with it again. And that's really where it took off. Again, it has been a problem for a long time because you don't get this kind of institutional rot overnight. But the real accelerant was the pandemic and the lockdowns and all of these government programs spending huge amounts of money and not really caring who was getting it and whether they deserve to get it.
Joel, you mentioned criminal syndicates. Can you expand on that a little bit? What syndicates are we talking about here?
Sure. The role of syndicates in defrauding the state unemployment department in California is well known. And there were groups in Russia, certainly, and in other places as well. I know the Russian syndicates were very much involved. But they learned how to game the system. They learned how to create bots and fake personalities and to steal identities and go into the California system and simply apply as recipients for unemployment spending. And here's another issue, right? Why was all this money going through the unemployment department? I mean, there were so many different ways to get pandemic relief to people. There were stimulus checks from the Treasury, for example. Why did so much money go through the unemployment department? It's because Democrats have long wanted state unemployment departments, not just in California, but around the country. They've wanted those unemployment departments to play a much larger role, to play a very large role in redistributing income. And so they want more government spending, more government programs to be handled by these unemployment departments. The response at the time from the Trump administration was, well, we don't think that these unemployment departments have the capacity. They don't have the administrative skills. They don't have the safeguards, the security measures to handle this amount of money. So Democrats didn't get all of the money to go through the unemployment departments, but they got a lot of it. And the Trump administration's concerns were well-founded because in California, the international crime rings found it very easy to blow right past whatever security mechanisms there had been. Now, the really crazy thing is that the person who led the unemployment department in California at the time was Julie Hsu. She was subsequently promoted when Biden took office to acting labor secretary. And today, she is the deputy mayor of New York in the Mamdani administration. She is the deputy mayor for economic justice. So you don't get punished for fraud in the Democratic Party. You get promoted.
The deputy mayor for economic justice. What a freaking world we live in. Okay, let's talk about these security measures that aren't there and weren't there. Were they removed? Was it just negligence? Because I know it's a detail, but the devil, as they say, is in those details.
Well, there are all kinds of reasons. So in some cases, they do remove certain features. And in other cases, there is just a failure to implement policies that are designed to prevent these kinds of things. I mean, for example, our state's junior senator, Alex Padilla, he was previously the Secretary of State. He was running the DMV. And they found out that over 1,000 foreigners had registered to vote at the DMV under the motor voter rule. Now, Democrats said for a long time that non-citizens are not going to be able to register to vote at the DMV. It's not going to happen. It never happens. They have to prove that they're citizens when they get their driver's licenses. It's never going to happen. Well, Jerry Brown, the governor before Newsom, he allowed illegal aliens to get driver's licenses. And so now that took down one of the firewalls they had against non-citizens somehow also registering to vote. So once you're not preventing non-citizens from getting driver's licenses, you have a lot more people coming into the DMV who are not citizens. And, you know, that box is going to be checked for registering to vote, either because people are checking it on purpose for nefarious reasons, or because people can't read, or because of ordinary error rates that happen when you're dealing with millions of people in California. But fact is that when Alex Padilla was in charge, thousands of people were registered to vote who were foreigners, who were not eligible to vote. And again, it's because they weakened one of the most important criteria weeding people out, which was that you could not be in the country illegally and get a driver's license. Then under Jerry Brown, of course, you could. Other states copied what California did. So, you know, there are all these safeguards in there. Once you start making these benefits and licenses much easier to get, look at the problem we're having with commercial driver's licenses and the controversy there. Illegal aliens getting commercial driver's licenses, people who can't read street signs, you know, massive amounts of carnage on the road, that terrible accident that happened where the truck did a U-turn and an entire family died because I guess he didn't read the sign. You know, you're getting all kinds of problems because we're just lowering, at least under the Biden administration and in California under the Newsom administration, we're lowering so many of the safeguards.
Joel, let's focus on hospice fraud because this is something that is obviously in the news. The vice president himself talks about it. We have all kinds of these investigative journalists over there with a YouTube channel and a microphone. What is happening? Why is it happening? Unravel all this for us.
Well, hospice fraud is particularly lucrative because dead people tend not to speak or move around too much. So one of the parties victimized by the fraud is never going to complain to anybody. So that's why hospice fraud is particularly attractive to people who want to commit some kind of fraud. But essentially what happens is you say you're providing hospice care to people and you use their identities to collect state money that's being spent for that purpose. And that has happened at hundreds of hospices. And yes, Nick Shirley and others have shown up to figure out what's happening with these hospices, and they'll find dozens of hospices registered at strip malls, and all you can find there are, you know, a Denny's and a gas station and no hospice. So they've been busting these hospices, and what's interesting about it is that only after the Trump administration got involved and the first prosecutor in L.A., Bill Asaley, former acting U.S. attorney there, well, he is the U.S. attorney, but you know, he doesn't have the official title. But only once the feds got involved did the state get involved. So now you have Attorney General Rob Bonta of California coming in and saying, "Oh, you know, me too. We're gonna prosecute some hospice fraud as well. And we were doing it, you know, since forever. And it's not because Trump's doing it that we're doing it. We know all about it." Well, they didn't really know all about it. I mean, if they did know about it, that's worse. So look, it's one of the more lucrative areas again. Because like Social Security fraud, where people continue to steal other people's Social Security checks, when someone dies, if it's not reported, it's very hard to monitor what's going on. So you're dealing with an area where people normally die in the ordinary course of things. And so the safeguards were pretty loose. But the state is losing huge amounts of money through this kind of fraud.
Joel, how much of this is foreign crime versus domestic crime? And I know that's a question you can't possibly answer, but I know you pay attention to this stuff. From what you can tell, I mean, from what I can tell, it looks like a lot of this is foreigners. I'm sure there have to be Americans involved somehow, some way, but can you weigh that out for me?
Well, it's both. You know, you have foreign hackers creating bots to steal unemployment insurance money, and then you have domestic actors either defrauding the government or, again, sometimes it's quite legal. So there's a problem in New York, for example, that we're starting to encounter in California, which is that New York decided a few years ago to pay people for home health care, for providing round-the-clock caretaking services for people who are convalescing at home for whatever reason. Now, home health care is a legitimate industry, but what started happening was people started signing up their relatives as home health care providers, and there weren't a lot of checks there. So it's now costing New York billions of dollars, and the same thing's happening in California. I mean, the entire area of home health care has been a massive source of fraud. But again, a lot of it is legal, and it's very hard to draw distinctions between a relative who's providing care and a relative who just hangs out and plays video games while grandma is in her hospital bed in her bedroom. I mean, it's a form of legalized fraud in a way, even though there's some criminal fraud happening as well. And is it foreign or is it domestic? Let me give you a different take on it. When you walk around LA and you see the crumbling state of our infrastructure there, you ask yourself, how is this possible in a state with such high taxes, in a city with such high sales taxes? How is it possible that this goes on? We've collected double the amount of revenue today than we did 10 years ago, and we certainly have not seen services increase by double or increase in quality by double. In fact, services have declined. So what's happening? And the reality is a lot of this money is being wasted or stolen, and that's money that is needed to fix the streets, to build better schools, to maintain sidewalks. You know, now the latest thing in LA is that residents are being asked to pay extra money to restore streetlights because of all the copper theft. Copper theft is a third world thing. You know, why do we have third world theft going on in a first world country that's about to host the Olympics? I mean, it's ridiculous. And then they're taxing the residents extra to pay after this is, you know, Democrats defunding the police. So the police can't be there to stop the copper thieves. And you know, we pay all these taxes. Where does it go? Well, it goes to fraud and waste. And that is both foreign and domestic, sadly.
I'm glad you brought up the Olympics. We'll come back to the fraud stuff in a moment, Joel. But I was there a few weeks ago. I had to do some media thing out there. And I hadn't been to L.A. in 15, 20 years. And as I was walking around downtown L.A., I kept thinking about the Olympics. I looked at the shocking state of downtown L.A. and I thought to myself, 2 years before this city's going to be featured on the world stage, I'm not hopeful, Joel.
Yeah, we have major problems with the preparations for the Olympics. And Mayor Karen Bass, who I give some credit to because she's working with the Trump administration, you know, she met this week with President Trump in the Oval Office to talk about rebuilding after the fire. And I think that's praiseworthy because our governor, Gavin Newsom, has just been trolling on social media for the last year and a half and hasn't bothered. And he went to Washington and nobody would see him. And that's why, because he's just decided to be a jerk rather than a governor. So I give the mayor credit for toning it down a little bit in terms of the attacks on Trump and actually deciding to work with him. But she came out with a budget this week that was basically a status quo budget, where there are no major initiatives. I didn't read the entire 524-page budget, but I did look at the executive summary and some of the tables, and I did a word search to see if the word Olympics featured in this entire 500-plus page document. The word Olympics appeared twice, and it was never in any kind of meaningful way. So here you've got 2 years to go before the Olympics, and the mayor of Los Angeles is not even thinking about how to get the city ready. And you say to yourself, okay, are we going to actually do this? I understand that the Olympic Committee is a private organization, that they're the ones who basically handle it, but the city is not preparing. And more than that, it's not seizing the opportunity that the Olympics provide. If the Olympics are coming to your town, it's an opportunity to invest. It's an opportunity to grow. And as you point out, it's an opportunity to showcase the city. We're not there. And the world is coming, and they're going to see my neighborhood still burnt down, struggling to rebuild, unless things turn around quickly. And maybe they are turning around thanks to President Trump. But you know, there's no urgency, there's no vision there. And that's the real problem. And you felt it when you were there. Absolutely. You can feel it when you're there. The leadership is lacking, and that's what LA needs.
Let's get back to the fraud. We mentioned hospice fraud, but healthcare fraud itself, Medicaid, you name it, is so pervasive nationwide. I can only assume it's even worse in California.
It is worse in California, and the problem in California is that, I don't know if you remember when President Obama gave that speech in 2009 to a joint special session of Congress about Obamacare. He wanted to sell Obamacare as a policy. And Representative Joe Wilson of South Carolina called him a liar. He heckled him, later apologized, but he heckled Obama because Obama said illegal aliens would not get Obamacare. And Joe Wilson said, "You lie." Now, it's true that in much of the country, illegal aliens don't get Obamacare, but in California, they do. And Gavin Newsom took great pride in 2024 when California started providing free, quote unquote, Medicaid to illegal aliens. And that Medicaid expansion was made possible by Obamacare. So you now have illegal aliens in the state getting Obamacare. Newsom has had to cut people off of that because the state just can't afford it. The whole system nearly went insolvent, Medi-Cal, that's our local Medicaid version. It almost went insolvent because they were losing billions of dollars every month because they signed up so many people and their community health problems. Again, legalized fraud, right? Because if you're in this country illegally, you are already committing certain kinds of fraud. And now you're getting onto our Medicaid programs and taking money from the federal taxpayer, at least indirectly. I mean, it's appalling, frankly. And Newsom had to stop adding new people to the insurance roster because the state's going bankrupt.
Joel, let's switch gears here and talk about education fraud, the amount of money that gets sunk into education for ever decreasing test scores is... what are those international scandals, to be honest with you, when you look at a country of our size? How bad is it in California?
It's pretty terrible. I mean, California used to be among the best states for education. Now it's in the bottom half. I won't say it's the worst, but it's definitely in the lower 50%. It's below average, if we put it that way. And it's going to stay there because the teachers' unions run everything in California. And they just got a massive raise that the LA school district can't afford to pay. They coordinated strikes and threats of strikes all over the state. They got raises everywhere, but the quality of teaching has not improved. Let me tell you something else that's happening in California with education, by the way, that just tells you how crazy this whole situation is. Gavin Newsom signed a law a few years ago, basically extending the statute of limitations for sexual abuse lawsuits indefinitely. I mean, technically, it opened up a three-year window where people who hadn't filed in the past could file within the three-year window. But then there's this other provision that you have 5 years to file a sexual abuse lawsuit from the point at which you remember the abuse, not from the point at which it happened. But if it happened 40 years ago and you remember it today, you have 5 years from today to file a lawsuit. So what happened? People started remembering abuse all over the state and started suing anyone with deep pockets. And so a lot of local governments and a lot of school districts have had to pay out massive settlements because of this law that Gavin Newsom signed. And he signed it at the height of the Me Too movement. And Democrats never really stopped to think what the consequences would be. We have statutes of limitation for a reason. It might not seem fair that someone can't get legal relief for something that happened 30 or 40 years ago. So maybe you allow them to sue, but you cap the damages. California didn't cap the damages. And so you have the LA USD, the LA school district, the public schools, shelling out so far $750 million for previous sex abuse lawsuits, and they have to borrow the money because they don't have it. That $750 million that could have been spent on higher teacher salaries, it could have been spent to help our kids in the classroom. So they're punishing today's kids and tomorrow's kids because of abuse that happened in the past. And that abuse was terrible. And obviously the victims deserve some kind of justice. But you can't adopt a system that just tells people they can have everything they want all the time. California is governed, in a sense, by adolescents, by people who are constantly in a teenage rebellion against authority, and you can't tell them that there are boundaries and there are rules. And common sense would dictate that you let people sue, but you cap the damages. We didn't do that. So California now is seeing school districts going bankrupt, seeing local governments having to either declare bankruptcy or dip into rainy day funds. I mean, even the wealthy community of Santa Monica is basically running out of money because they had to pay a $250 million settlement because of some horrible city staffer who allegedly abused people 40 years ago. I mean, it's crazy. So we are burying the future in our desire to compensate for the past, but it's not an adult way to run anything.
All right, pause on that. We have more coming up with Joel. I love sleeping. It's one of my favorite activities in the world. It doesn't come as easy as you get older. Stress is life. You wake up, use the bathroom. That takes 3 hours to fall asleep. I know how it goes, too. You don't sleep like you did when you were 12 years old until you start having a cup of hot chocolate before bed. Dream powder from Beam will change your life. I know there are all kinds of things out there that help you sleep. How many of them are natural? Dream powder has natural things in it. It's a cup of hot chocolate with all those things inside of it. I drink one about 20 minutes before bed. I sleep 8 hours, 9 hours a night, and I don't wake up groggy. I don't wake up with one eye hanging on my cheek. I wake up refreshed because it's natural. Buy one bag of Dream Powder, you will always have some. Go to shopbeam.com/Jesse Kelly. Pick up a bag today. Joel, are people leaving? I know you've been there a long time. You have a lot of friends there. Are your friends leaving? It's just so unbelievable to me that people would leave paradise, but I hear about it all the time.
Look, right now I live between California and the East Coast because my family was displaced by the Palisades fire. You know, and when I'm in California, I love it. It's amazing. Quality of life is incredible. I mean, the weather's great, but not just that. California is incredibly fun, and I've never felt more free to pursue my dreams than I do in California, frankly. I mean, I think California is still a fantastic place. but then your town burns down. I mean, I can't live in my house because it's still being repaired because of the Palisades fire. My entire neighborhood, or 75% of it, disappeared. And that's the problem in California. We are not dealing with the basics of security, of disaster preparedness, of water, of electricity, fuel. I mean, how is it that California's gas prices are $2 per gallon higher than everybody else? Some of it is taxes, but some of it is also that we just don't prepare ourselves for the realities of the world. We think we can choose all this green technology and we can shut down the oil refineries, drive fossil fuel companies out of the state and out of business, and that it's going to be just fine. California is dependent now on oil coming through the Strait of Hormuz. We don't have pipelines that go to the rest of America to bring in cheaper oil from Texas and from Permian Basin and from, who knows, North Dakota. I mean, we don't have it. So we've got to pull it in from the Persian Gulf. We've got to have it refined in India and other places, in Vietnam or whatever. It just becomes impossible for us to get. I mean, it's more damaging to the environment to have to bring in our oil by tanker than it would be to have pipelines. So because of this green utopia we've pursued, we've basically made it too expensive. And that's the story with California. We are shooting ourselves in the foot. So do I have friends who've left California? I do. I have had friends who lost everything in the fire and who want to rebuild, but they've just decided it's too hard in California. It's just too hard. And I told my wife when we moved to California 15 years ago that we loved it so much, we were going to hang on by our fingernails. We're going to defy the cost of living. We're going to deal with all the challenges. We're just going to stay here. And I don't care about the politics. I mean, I'm going to try to change things if I can. But I just love it here so much. We're just going to make it work. And let me tell you, we are hanging on by our fingernails, like in a very literal way, because California makes it extremely difficult to do anything. And there are states that have a quality of life that feels to me a little lower than in California, but you can afford life in those states. And if bad things happen in those states, you get support from your government. And they're not going to let homeless people sleep out on the street all the time. And they're not going to let roads go unpaved. And they're not going to let schools continue to fail. And they'll give people vouchers. And, you know, when you've been in California a long time and you go to other states that work, it's pretty eye-opening. And so I still have hope for California. I think this election year could really produce some interesting results. But Californians need a real reality check. And we have let the perfect be the enemy of the good. We have tried to pursue a kind of utopia in California, we being, you know, all of us collectively. It really is a problem on the left more than the right. But there's this idea that California should be the perfection of all of our dreams for humanity. Nothing can do that. You know, read the Bible. We are fallible from day one. So let's at least deal with human beings and not with a world made for angels. And let's try to prepare for disasters and for crime and for homelessness and the fact that our kids need to be educated. I mean, all this boring, mundane stuff is what you need. You need the basics. Otherwise, you can't have the good stuff too.
Joel, whatever happened to all that? The money they raised for the fire victims, I know there were all kinds of problems with that. The rebuilding, which amazingly is still not being done. You hear these internet rumors, you never know what's true about they're going to start throwing up low rent, crappy apartments. That'll bring great people in there. But what is the reality of it?
The reality is that it's a bit of a mess. In my neighborhood, which is a more middle-class area of Pacific Palisades, ironically, we're building faster than in a lot of other places because we have smaller lots and we're very well organized and we've been able to keep our collective costs a little lower. The very wealthy residents, ironically, are having a harder time because they have bigger lots, higher construction costs. Some of them live on hillsides. That's a real headache. And very poor people have had a real hard time. We live above a couple of trailer parks that were destroyed in the fire. And they have not been able to get the same level of relief. And it's a mixed bag. I will say this, though. President Trump intervened, and he accelerated the process of getting permits accepted and approved. And Mayor Karen Bass initially said, "We don't want your help, Mr. President." But she's now come to the party. She's come to the table. And I'm still very critical of her neglect during the fire. But she's up for re-election this year, and you do feel like democracy is working when politicians do the right thing, even if it's a little bit late, but she's now working with the Trump administration. And so things are starting to turn around and move in the right direction. Trump's also intervening in the insurance market, which is a total disaster that California created for itself. I do think that what Trump has done is remarkable, and I'm saying that because there are no votes for him in California. First of all, he's not running for re-election again, but there are no votes for him in Pacific Palisades or Altadena. There are no congressional races that are even close in our area, but he's decided to put his political capital at risk to get behind the rebuilding effort, and to me, that's real leadership. So he has jump-started this process, and I'm hopeful that it'll continue to improve.
You mentioned there aren't any red votes there. There aren't any Republican votes there. It's hard for people on the outside looking in to imagine how that can still be the case, given how mismanaged and disastrous everything is. Even if your neighbor is a hardcore Democrat, at some point in time, he steps over another pile of homeless poop and can't rebuild his house and his kid's school sucks, doesn't he think about changing how he votes?
I do think you're seeing some change on the margins, but people vote for different reasons, and Republicans tend to vote for policies. Republicans want better government. Democrats tend to vote for a better feeling about themselves. And I don't mean to sound too condescending when I say that. It's not just narcissism, but they vote with their hearts, and Republicans vote with their wallets. And so Democrats are very susceptible to the idea, which is pitched at them constantly by the media and their party leaders, that Republicans, well, they might do a better job, but they're also just bad people. They might fix up your neighborhood, but you wouldn't want them as neighbors because they're cruel, they are insensitive, they're racist, they're greedy, whatever. And that's very, very hard to shake, especially when you've demonized the other side so much. I mean, I don't think Republicans demonize Democrats the way Democrats demonize Republicans. Yes, Republicans say some silly things too, but Republicans tend to look at Democrats as people who are misguided and a little naive, but not actually evil. Democrats have made Republicans evil in their own imaginations. We're all Hitler, we're all Nazis and whatever. And so that keeps Democrats in the fold, because if you're the Democrat who dissents and goes outside and starts talking to Republicans, never mind voting Republican, then you're normalizing the Nazis. And that's how they enforce a kind of very rigid group discipline and groupthink. So it's very hard for people to think themselves outside of that. And that's why Democrats keep voting the same way. But weirdly, in California this year, because we have this jungle primary system, which is totally ridiculous, there is a possibility that because there are so many Democratic Party candidates for governor splitting the vote, you could see two Republicans qualify for the general election. So you'd have no Democrat in the general election in November for governor, which would be highly entertaining and also would at least mean there's some kind of change is coming. So that is possible. And I guess the moral lesson of that is when you don't allow space for opposition, when you shut out the opposition and you live in a bubble, sometimes reality hits you pretty hard. And I think political reality could hit these Democrats pretty hard if they don't get their act together.
Joel, maybe I'm a conspiracy theorist at heart, but I just have such a hard time believing a rigid Marxist system like California has wouldn't find a way to knife enough Democrats out of the race to ensure what you just said does not happen. Can you see that happening?
It's possible, but the problem they face is that legally they can't take their names off the ballot. So it doesn't matter how many Democrats drop out. They are on the ballot. They're on the hook for June 2nd. So, I mean, even Eric Swalwell is probably going to pick up 4 or 5%, even though he dropped out, because people won't know he dropped out. They'll just see his name. They saw it in the news somewhere. They remembered there's some story. Oh, yeah, I guess we'll vote for him. So he's gonna get this kind of background kind of a vote. And, you know, that's how it works.
Joel, prayers for you guys out there. Hang in there, brother. All right. Lighten the mood. Next. Higher Americans. I am so passionate about this now, and I'll tell you something else. I probably should let this go because you don't want to live in the past. I'm angry at young Jesse because young Jesse never cared about it. Never cared at all about hiring American, patronizing companies that hire American. It just wasn't something that entered my mind. Whatever, just give me cheap prices. But hiring Americans is really important. We know that now as we see our country being handed away to foreigners. Pure Talk hires Americans. When Verizon, AT&T, and T-Mobile send those American jobs overseas while charging you a fortune, Pure Talk's charging you way less while hiring Americans. The customer service experience is, dare I say it, pleasant. They're not just Americans. They're nice to talk to, helpful. You can switch in 10 minutes and save a fortune. their CEO is a Vietnam veteran. Switch to Pure Talk and switch now. PureTalk.com/JesseTV. As we round out this little saga, we just had to, I mean, maybe we'll call it a light in the mood, final thoughts, but where is your money going as you work your fingers to the bone? These people.
No sodas. You can't get your coffee creamer. You can't even get ice cream. Hey, that's, you know, that's wrong. What am I to do? You know, ain't that's wrong. Somebody needs to do something about this. This, I know it's affecting everybody. You know, it. I eat healthy. I love my fruit. You know, I love my sweets too.
The sense of entitlement. I'll see you tomorrow.
Why should you listen to Armstrong and Getty On Demand?
We're not boring. A lot of news is boring.
And tedious.
And depressing.
And makes you angry. You don't want to live your life like that.
Hey, I'm Jack Armstrong. He's Joe Getty.
We're Armstrong and Getty.
We try to bring you the truth.
And help you figure out this crazy modern world.
How about something about a comedic tone?
We have a winner.
Yes. Listen to Armstrong and Getty On Demand on the iHeartRadio app,
Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.